Well, I can see we're coming up on 11 a.m. in Alberta, so I'm going to start the recording and get this session going by welcoming everybody. I know that some of you are here from time zones that are not most favorable, and we really appreciate your attendance. So before getting started with today's presentation, I'd like to remind everyone that the session will be recorded and archived on the CIDR website for future reference. The PowerPoint slides will also be saved to the CIDR site, and I'm happy to say that we now have MP3 recordings of the presentations if you prefer. Today's session is going to be a group presentation followed by a discussion period. During the discussion period, you're invited to use the microphone by clicking on the microphone in the bottom left-hand corner of your screen. And when you're done speaking, please remember to click on it again to open it up for others. If you don't have audio today, you can always type in any questions or comments in the text box. Also, if you're waiting to speak, you can let us know by clicking on the hands up button that's in the bottom left-hand corner of the participant box. It's a little hand with a green arrow on it there. And that just lets us know that you're waiting to be heard, and we want to give you that opportunity. Now, I'd like to introduce today's presenters. David Anand has been an accounting faculty member with Athabasca University for 18 years now. And in 2002, he assumed the position of director of the School of Business. He continues to teach in the Athabasca MBA program. And his research interests include the educational applications of computer-based instruction and CMC to distance learning, and the effects of online learning on the organization of distance-based universities. Gunnar Schwede began working at Athabasca University in 2002 in the Computing Help Desk Department. In 2005, Gunnar moved to the School of Business and joined this team as the Systems Support Specialist. He was introduced to Second Life in the beginning of 2007, and he continues with the team to develop and build the AU Island that you're going to see, as well as other venues. Bob Heller obtained his PhD in experimental psychology in 1992 at the University of Alberta. He's been with Athabasca University since 2001 in the Center for Psychology, where he became interested in conversational agents and distance education. He has also continued his earlier research on cognition in normal and pathological aging, and is currently looking at television engagement in LTC residents with dementia. Finally, Colin Elliott has worked at Athabasca University for just over 2 years. He is currently the digitization specialist in the library, which includes anything from digitizing old photographs to making content available to the latest mobile technologies. Colin is one of the people in the library that has been working on AU's Second Life project, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about this project and seeing this project after listening to Lindy McEwen's project in Athabasca. I was so hoping that there was something underway at in Australia, and I was so hoping there was something underway in Athabasca, and I was very happy to hear from this team, and I'm very excited to hear about this today, as I'm sure everyone else is here. So thank you very much for joining us and taking the time to share your research and your work, and I'll hand over the microphone now.
Thanks, Lynn. Just a question about the slide presentation. Thank you very much. It's Dave Anand here. As Lynn mentioned, I'm the director of the School of Business. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. I wanted to give a couple minute overview of Second Life at Athabasca University, how it's developing and where we're planning to go with it. You'll see that this is very much a working process, as is probably expected. The other thing I'd like to mention is that we won't be going live to Second Life to do the demonstration because of some connection problems we've experienced with Illuminate in the past, but we will be presenting slides of the island, and also at the end inviting people to join us in Second Life to at our island to explore AU's site. We really are looking forward to feedback from this group. It's valuable for us at this time to really help us understand some opportunities at AU for where we could go with this. as you'll see, we're a fairly unique university, and we're excited about the possibilities, but at the same time, we realize that there's also some differences that may affect the way that Second Life can be used in this environment. A brief background of this development: we met for the first time as a Second Life group in about March of 2007. We just sent out a call to various people across the university, and was pleasantly surprised when we received responses from people in psychology, the Center for Distance Education, other staff in the School of Business, Educational Media Development, which does a lot of our actual course development work at the university, Institutional Studies, which does a lot of our data collection, gathering, and dissemination in the university, and also the president of our AU Student Union joined us, which has been very valuable to the group. We seemed to have a critical mass developed, and so we made a decision at one of the meetings to purchase an island. I don't know if all of you are familiar with how it works, but you actually purchase virtual space on a server. Second Life is owned by Linden Labs. That gives you about 66,000 square meters of space. As you'll see, it's not a lot, but it's enough, and that costs us about $1,000 US. And now we pay about $150 a month maintenance fee to keep this maintained. The information you're about to see has been developed by AU volunteers. Gunnar, as mentioned, has done most of the development in an overall sense. And then we'll hear from Colin and Bob, whose areas have developed or are developing specific applications within that environment. A little bit about Athabasca University, for those of you who aren't familiar with this. We're primarily an undergraduate institution, although we do have a handful of or more of graduate programs. About 80, almost 90%, I guess, of our registrations are in undergraduate courses. And these are in what we call individualized study, which means that students can start a course any time of the year and proceed at their own pace. They have about a six-month contract to complete their courses. Because of the flexibility, we get a lot of working people, people with families, and as a consequence, about only 20% of our registrations are for people registered in a particular program at our university. Most are visiting from other institutions or taking one or two courses for their own interest, for instance. As a result of the unpaced nature of the undergraduate programs, I should mention the graduate programs are online but paced. They have specific start and end dates, much like semester-based learning. But our individualized study at the undergraduate level makes it difficult for formal learning and collaboration to take place because of the individualized nature, the fact that students can proceed at their own pace. And we've also found some evidence that students are a little resistant to being required to interact with each other if it impedes their progress through the course because of their other commitments to work and family, etc. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Gunnar to take over the slides, and he'll give us a general overview of the AU Island. Gunnar?
Hi, everyone. Gunnar here. I'll show you a brief overview of the island as it is now. Let me just switch to slide here. This is a bird's eye view of the island. I have several here, so you have an idea what is all on there. In the foreground, let me just go to the next one here. In the, you see the building up on the top right. That's the main AU building, and then we have administrative buildings and other areas where we see some a little bit more of during the slideshow here. This one here is actually the area where everybody will land at first. So if you teleport to the island, this is most likely where you end up. In front, you see there's big panels. Those are directional panels. You can actually click on those. And those of you who are familiar with Second Life, one option to go to places is actually a teleport. So you click on something, and you will be asked to if you want to accept the teleport. And you'll end up at that area. So those are the panels here. In the foreground, it's a bit hard to see, but we have a little on the left of the avatar there. There's a little areas panels where you can actually fill out forms, and they'll be emailed to the administrator. And right now I have it set up so you can actually provide some feedback on the island and to see, if you have any comments and that kind of stuff. This one here, as mentioned before, is the main AU building. We'll just take a closer look here. Inside, I have some examples. You see a kind of a table set up there. Some examples that I created that show a little bit what Second Life can do as far as communicating or connecting with other ports, databases, websites, and that kind of stuff. The first item here, it's a litmus column. It can be actually, you can simply click on it and it opens up the website that is displayed on it. And this website here is for new students to get some information. They don't have to necessarily read off this, but they can click on this and then a new page opens up with the information. The next one here, I created three sample courses, and these are in form of course packages, similar to software packages. You can simply click on those. Information comes up. It'll either connect you to the syllabus, or we can have some text information within, so the student can actually just simply go to. I'm envisioning here like a bigger panel with those displayed, and a student can simply click on one of those and get some information from the course without having to browse anywhere or to go anywhere to get that information. Next one here, I actually created a sign-up sheet. We have an online registration form that people can, new students can fill out to become a student at the university. They can fill that out. There's an image on the bottom here that the students can actually see how the form looks like, and the register here button will connect to the actual form online. Next one is this is simply an example of media that you can actually view media as far as MP3s, videos, slideshows, PowerPoint presentations, that kind of stuff. That can be all viewed in world. This is actually linked to students' comments on the experience in at the Athabasca University. This one here I created simply for if a student goes to Second Life, so it's an informational item, so you can actually see how the university will look like. Again, this connects to a website. Also, these two screens have slideshows. They show the building. It's a kind of a virtual walkthrough on how the university actually in real life looks like. Three items here. On the left-hand side is a Dropbox. Student comments can be accepted there. Simply, people can create a note card in World, and everybody that is a little bit familiar with that, you can just simply create a text file, just as similar as in Windows, and you can drop it in there for the administrator. Second item, the green bubble there is an online indicator, and the reason why I put that there is, it's for me, it's kind of hard to, if I'm on a website somewhere, to get in contact with somebody other than through email. Sometimes you have a form, which is not bad, but you always have to wait for a response. This one, if somebody's in world, in this case it's green, I'm in world, it shows the students, okay, this person is in world, so I can just simply IM them and I can expect a response right away. Posting board, anything is possible there. This is for the public. You can post pictures, sound files, certain location that you seen that are of interest to let other students know about, you know, something that is of interest in world and that they would like you to go see, check it out, kind of thing. We're at a different location, same, still on the island, but a little bit over. Amphitheater, again, this could be used to get together. Students can either have a meeting there, or it could be a formal learning session. You can, again, on these TVs or screens, you can play video and slideshows and that kind of stuff. Audio, MP3 files. The podium could be used for presentation. Not only video in the background, you know, you can show something three-dimensional there, kind of thing. So that's the purpose of this. This one here, I created. It's an advertising item basically. You can click on it on either one of those panels, and you get an in-world free AU T-shirt, which has the AU logo on it, and it comes in different colors, kind of thing. So that's kind of a little thing we added there. This building is our administrative building, and I'm just gonna. It's modeled actually to the proposed building that they actually are going to be building here in not so far, hopefully, future. Inside we have some meeting tables and chairs, and again in the background it's a little hard to see, but in the background there's actually a slide projector, and which is again the same thing as we have the TVs. It can display videos or slideshows or that kind of stuff. This building has three stories, so it could be developed as needed. This is the outside view, but this is actually 300 meters up from the island. In Second Life, you can not only build on the ground, you can actually build up somewhere in the sky, and the buildings are suspended in the sky, so you don't have to do any funky programming or whatever. If you run out on the bottom, out of room, you can simply just go up and create a whole new level up in whatever height. This is a modular classroom example. Each of these modules can be duplicated, and you can actually create a whole cluster of these kind of things. And the view from the inside, here I simply created a classroom setup, a standard classroom setup, where students can have a seat. You can just click on the seat there, and your avatar will sit down. It creates a little bit order there, rather than having everybody standing around, and it creates a little bit order, and it looks nice and neat when everybody's there. Two items I actually added there, two classrooms as an example. These are interactive classrooms. So in Second Life, the part that always stands out to me on web pages, you have a static view. You can view maybe a video, but you cannot really interact with it unless you have a program where you're able to click on things and interact. In Second Life, you can actually go around items, look at them from a view that you actually want to look at. And in this case, this is a module that you can modify in real time in world. It's just a little example, and the same is on the other side here. You can click on items, get some information from them, and so it's a little bit more interactive than a static web page. We're going to come later on to this room. It's just a little overview, a piece of that in there, so we'll just skip that for now and we'll come back to that. Inofficial area here, it's kind of a fun little area I created. For those who are familiar with Second Life, you know, you can, there's social events all over the place. There's dances, there's music groups, life in world, that kind of stuff. So that's what I basically created here. It's a dance floor, everybody can join in. And I was asked many times actually, why would you, you know, dance in Second Life? It's kind of weird or whatever kind of thing. But basically what it is, it's a social gathering. You dance together. You don't have to do anything. Your avatar will dance on its own. And it's basically there for, you can talk to other people and you know, have your hands free kind of thing, and have a little, you know, get together, you know, in world where you can relax and that kind of stuff. So as an example here, I put the sign. We have signs outside on our trails, and this is one of those signs. So one day I actually went outside, I took my little camera, and I took a picture of the sign that we have there, and I imported that into Second Life. So what I'm going to picture with this is that you can create anything that actually exists in real life, real close in Second Life. Anything is built with prems, and the texture over top, which this is, will give it the realism, basically, and that's what I wanted to show with that. Here we have an item that is actually on our property, and that's the observatory. It's reproduced from a real-life building, and this is just for demonstration purposes. There's a little bit functionality to it. You can open up and close the dome, and you can the screen again has some slideshows and some videos from the real deal here. So you can students can click on it, and they can be as close as they really can if they can't come here to this item. Next one. I'm going to go to the next one and show you this sphere here is actually in the sky, and I overlaid it with a texture from the outside. It's about I think it's 100 meters in diameter, and it just hangs there. So you can use these kind of things to create different environments. Going back, that's the inside of the sphere. I overlaid it with stars. In the background, the whole thing will rotate, so it actually looks like a star constellation, and it rotates. Of course, it rotates a little fast, but I wanted to show what it can do, kind of thing. There's a platform in the center. You see the Earth, the Sun, Moon is kind of hidden, I think. Saturn is in the front. You can change. This is again an interactive, so to speak, classroom. You can change the rotation of the Moon around the Earth. As an example, and then watch what happens to the gravitational pull and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a teaching tool. It's pretty neat to see. We were there. This one here, again, real life item. That's actually the fountain setup that we have here. Little differences, but it's kind of shows. I wanted to show what you can do actually there. As far as realism goes, and that's actually, if you see pictures here, it looks pretty close to that. Again, here, this is our Athabasca University sign at the front, and you can just overlay that. You can make exactly the same shape of sign, put your texture over top, and it looks like the real deal. Little item I created, actually my daughter came up with that. This is the AU logo, and we created a little seating area there with the AU logo in wood kind of thing, and I think it looks kind of neat. And these are just things that when I go in Second Life, it's nice to have the visual, not only you concentrate on what you want to achieve there, but the visual I think is really important to draw people there, students there, to have it nice and comfortable for them to actually, they want to be there and have something to do and get together, and it's just a nice atmosphere. Another thing I want to mention here that the whole island actually has ambient sound, so whenever you go, like there's a there's some trees in the background and that kind of stuff. If you go there, you can actually hear birds, and the birds are authentic birds that we have in this area, in the boreal forest, that kind of stuff. So there's another area. It's kind of a beach area, so there's waves going, and you can actually hear the waves. So that all plays together with the ambience that you get from going to these places. And, yeah, that's about all I have here, and I'll say thank you, and the next person, I think, will take over.
Thanks, Gunnar. It's Bob Heller taking over as the next dancer in this routine. Actually, I think this should... looks like some slides are not present. Now, I guess I should have checked the slideshow before. I could do one of two things. Colin could begin his discussion on the library project, and I could come back and follow up with mine. There are four slides that are rather crucial. I can get them loaded pretty quickly since I'm a moderator, but I'll maybe turn it over to Colin to take over for now.
Okay, thanks, Bob. This is Colin Elliott. I'm a digitization specialist in the AU Library, and we're just starting out building some things in Second Life. And so part of my job is putting images, audio, and video online from different collections. So these collections can be historical collections, both local and northern. We have a natural history collection as well. And right now we're working on a number of other collections and getting them up on the World Wide Web in the near future, we hope. So our Second Life project is to create a virtual gallery. So as I said before, we have the content. And the idea here is we want to give users part of the experience as if they were visiting a gallery in real life. So rather than actually visiting a web page, they can go and walk through a gallery and explore the gallery. And Second Life also gives us the option of adding a number of enhancements. So these enhancements can be MP3 audio files. So instead of just seeing a picture of an animal, you can see the picture and listen to the sounds an animal makes. For historical photographs, we've also digitized audio of seniors talking about their old photographs, and so this can be added right there. So instead of just seeing a photograph, you can also listen to them talking about the photograph at the same time. Second Life also supports videos, so we can embed content right onto the wall beside the image or in addition to an image so that people can go there and view movies as well as different kinds of slideshows. Another of the obvious strengths of Second Life is the ability to create an environment for people to go through. So if you have an exhibition on, you know, photographs in the north or whatever, you can actually put it in a room or on an area of the island that represents that area. So you could have snow and, you know, different animals from the north, different you know, plants, anything like that, the sounds as well. So you get the ambient sounds, the flora and fauna from the area that the exhibit is from. Or if it, you know, you can set a mood, you can set it back into the 1800s or something like that if you want. We can also add the metadata, or, you know, the descriptions of the pictures. We can do it like a typical museum or gallery where you have an information card right beside the picture so that you can go ahead and you know, look at the picture and read the different things, you know, the title, the photographer, where it was taken, when it was taken, anything like that. The first of these slides are pictures from Second Life here. These were created by Guna, so thank you very much, Guna. We can see that these are three photographs from an Alberta wildlife filmmaker and photographer. We've put them up on the wall with frames, and you can see the information cards right beside them there. This is a closer view of one of the photographs, and you can see, you can probably almost read the card, and you can just see, you know, the way that you can go in and have a closer look at things. And of course, if you're in-world, you can look even closer. This one over here is a picture of a bison, and you can see just above the card we've actually added an audio button, so a user can go in there, click that, and actually hear the sound of the bison, which is a very scary sounding animal if you've never heard one before. So that is the virtual gallery project that we're going to be starting in the immediate future. In the more distant future, we hope to be developing an information skills sort of tutorial or tour within Second Life. The AU Library has been working with the Open University UK Library to enhance an information skills tutorial that they created called Safari. And Safari is skills in accessing, finding, and reviewing information. It is a tour that takes the user through different aspects of information skills. So these are things like searching, evaluating, and organizing information. We hope to be able to, you know, repackage this content in a way that's more suitable for Second Life. So, for example, Second Life, you know, one of the strengths anyway isn't just text. So we want to limit text, or we can create virtual books with the text, things like that. And of course, we want to be able to use objects, multimedia again, screenshots, links to other resources both within and outside of Second Life. And so the idea is that each lesson would have content, multimedia activities, and just activities at the end of it to test the user's knowledge. We could also staff this area with librarians so that they can answer any questions that people have as they come onto the island and work their way through the tutorials. Again, one of the other big advantages, of course, of Second Life is the ability to create an environment so that people will actually be able to move through the safari as they walk from lesson to lesson or part to part, and also to teleport to and from the lesson so that they can see different parts of Second Life and get information from other areas. So these are the main projects that the library is working on or going to be working on in the near future. So we're excited to be working in Second Life. And if you have any questions, I think my email is at the beginning of this slide, but I'll also be in world after the presentation. My avatar's name is Colin Hubenu, and I look forward to meeting you all. Thank you. And hopefully back to Bob now.
Thanks, Colin. I was able to load up the slide, so I'll just sort of continue. And before I describe our involvement with Second Life, I'd just like to provide a little bit of background to the this part of the talk and some of the work that myself and Mike Proctor have been involved with over the last few years. We became interested in chat agents or conversational agents, programs that converse with the user using natural language rules and symbols. Some of you may recall Eliza, the first chatbot, probably the first successful chatbot by Joseph Weizenbaum, but more recent is Alice, artificial linguistic internet computer entity, I believe. If you're unfamiliar with conversational agents, check out PandoraBots.com, where you'll find over 20,000 active chatbots. Last time I checked, I think God was the most popular. It's good to know. I guess the point just wanted to make is that, and this came out recently by Curly Hall and Bull, that advances in chat agent performance have increased the potential of this technology and its application in the field of education. That's our feeling as well, and it's a feeling that I think is especially appropriate for distance education. In fact, the original idea for this was somehow to fill up our chat rooms with agents that would be there for students who, when we were trying to fool around with social networking. To cut right to the chase, though, we've been working with historical figure applications, beginning first with Freudbot, then Piaget bot. I'll describe those in a moment. But we think it's an application that lends itself to Second Life as well. There are at least two benefits for chat agents in Second Life. In Second Life, chat agents are assigned to avatars and thus become embodied and closer to what Castles referred to as embodied conversational agents. This simply highlights, I think, the primacy of conversation as a natural means to communication, so thus making chat agents, I think, perhaps more effective. The other part of this is the idea that avatars can be scripted to interact with the user in various pedagogical contexts, and I think then becoming closer to what Lester refers to as an animated pedagogical agent. In other words, we're simply aligning the avatar behavior and the environment in the service of some broader pedagogical objective. So we took our two chat agents that we've been playing with for the last couple of years, Freudbot and Piagetbot. These are programs that are programmed to converse in the first person on topics related to the life and work of Sigmund Freud and John Piaget. This historical figure application is really a takeoff from the sort of famous personalities. If you're familiar with chat agents, you'll know that people like John Lennon, Elvis Presley, I think I just mentioned God as a popular agent on Pandora bots. There is a sort of some kind of appeal, attraction to speaking with past famous people from the past, and certainly we found some of that evidence when working with Freud. The other thing about our chat agents is that chats are meant to be purposeful and meaningful, and so we have our content organized as narratives with multiple entry and exit points. And basically, it's capitalizing on those conversational rules that people know so well to switch or progress through the topics. So this is work that had been done in advance of Second Life, and the interest that we had was whether they'd work in Second Life. And so, in fact, I must acknowledge the work of Mike Proctor in this regard. It's his technological skills that have allowed us to move our chat agents into Second Life and providing animation in both a 3D environment. The room that you saw earlier, and I'll show you some screen captures of that room again, is the room where Freud resides, Sigmund Freud. There's another spot for Piaget down the hall, I believe. And I think although the preliminary work has been positive, in other words, we've been able to use Second Life scripts to have our avatars collect and store information, detect the presence of other avatars, initiate conversations successfully using the chat technologies that the conversational agents are built on. Further work would be directed towards sort of enhancing this basically simulation. That is, the office of Freud right now is not authentic in any sense, but like many of the interesting experiences on Second Life, you can make authentic past historical recreations, which I think do more to engage the student in the exchange of information and construction of knowledge. So I'm just going to show a couple of screen captures, and I'll have to bounce back to where I thought I was. Okay, so here is the avatar approaching Freud. If you have questions, again, like Colin, I'll be in the world afterwards, and FreudBot is set up to engage visitors. There's still some problems, logistics to work out, and I'm glad Mike Proctor is here online to answer questions. But if you do want to talk to Freud, it is a sort of a one at a time at this point. Anyways, this is a conversation I had with Freud. I don't know if you can read that script, but it just gives you a feel for the kinds of things you can ask Freud and what he can talk about. I think at this point we're excited with the opportunities that Second Life provides us with our conversational agents, and in fact we were looking and are examining, you know, using animated character software, looking at the interface. Second Life provides a much broader palette in terms of the interface, including an immersive environment, so it's that aspect that we're interested in exploring, and whether or not it does sort of contribute to the overall engagement that we hope these agents will have with students and ways to learn more about psychology. So with that, I think I go back to Dave and Ann to sort of wrap things up, and I'm sorry, Dave, but perhaps this next slide will you'll know where to go. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. As we mentioned in the chat box here, the site is open to the public at this time, and we'll be in world if you'd like to chat, either type or actual voice chat within InWorld. The SL URL is listed there. If anybody would like, we'll be in there immediately after this until, I guess, the last dog is hung. The wrap-up here, we have been giving some thought about the implications for Second Life within the Athabasca University environment. As we've had some examples here of some informal social networking functions. I think Gunnar illustrated the open-air areas, dance floor, etc. Some of the ideas we've had, many of our students can't attend convocation, so one of the applications in Second Life may be the ability to stream convocation video to Second Life and also have avatars meet and greet within world, faculty, students, tutors, etc. We also have quite a bit of interest with our students who often correspond with academic experts and receive advice and interact with educators online through email or telephone, and they never really get to know who these people are. And so we've also thought about having Meet Your Tutor Nights, virtual Meet Your Tutor Nights, where we could post actual pictures of people and have avatars in the world as well to meet and talk with students as well. Another application we see, information dissemination, is obviously a big one that Colin has covered somewhat. Because of the need, the fact that our courses are proceeding, students are proceeding at their own pace, I think a lot of the applications that we sense off the top for Second Life can best be met in our graduate programs that have cohort-based learning. There's obviously a lot of room here for gender and role reversal in terms of gender and race, for instance. We also see a need. We're developing a Moodle platform at Athabasca University, and there's a real need. We have done some initial investigation into Slootle, which is the tie-in between Second Life and Moodle. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we're hoping to build our graduate research program around tying in our Second Life to our Moodle LMS primarily. We've also talked about simulations. Bob, I think, has mentioned the attraction of having historic figures set in historic settings. We've talked about this in the business side of things as well. It's a little more difficult because there are, I think, commercial applications that are going to be hard to beat in terms of efficiency and features, simply because they can be built and shared amongst many universities. So it's something we're going to have to think about a little more closely, I think. Overall, our latest plan is to go fairly slow, work with individual projects, some of which have been outlined here, the chatbot projects, the information literacy project, for instance, developing these on a pilot basis, and really trying to be careful and sensitive to user acceptance, particularly in our individualized study environment. We've also got some other projects ongoing, for instance, in our computing systems area. There's some gaming developments and some fairly large research grants that may be coming on site. And these are planned to be developed in other immersive environments. For instance, Sun has a Dark Star equivalent to Second Life that these may be developing. So we're really at the nascent stage, and we're trying to keep our fingers on the pulse across the university of many developments in immersive environments, not just Second Life, to try to determine what works best in terms of pedagogy and also, hopefully at some point, a learning platform or an immersive environment that we can standardize on to go forward. We've added here some additional resources to our slideshow for those of you who are newbies to Second Life. These are quite good in terms of videos that you can look at and understand the environment a little better. I've also provided here some contacts, email contacts for people at the university. If anybody listening wants to contact us further, that would be fine. And I think at this point I'll thank the group and just turn it over to Lynn at this point for her last words.
Thank you very much, David. I've got to echo Lindy here. This is all very exciting. It's just amazing what you've accomplished actually in such a short time already that the AU island looks fantastic and very rich, very detailed. It's amazing. And true to life in some aspects too, I noticed. So I'm very excited to see how things progress on AU Island, as I'm sure everyone else is. And perhaps I can hit you up for another presentation in a year from now as things have progressed even further. So thank you very much for sharing all this with us. And I'm going to let everybody ask you the questions that I think they've been dying to ask all along, because the text has been rapid here, and I can see there's hands up already. So I will hand over the mic to people who would like to use the audio. And just before I do that, though, point out our next CIDR session is taking place February 29th, and it will be a very large group presentation with Randy Garrison and a number of other well-known people. I'm sure you'll all recognize when you see it on the website. And they'll be talking about the Community of Inquiry Framework. They've developed a validation instrument. So please join us for that in 2 weeks' time. And thank you, everybody, for showing up. And I'll turn over the mic.
Well, I'll jump right in. It's Terry. Excellent presentation, and I'm really pleased and proud of you guys for having accomplished lots. My question is, I think that the exposure to Athabasca by people just wandering in and seeing that registration form and all that, it may justify the project economically just by itself. But of course, the bean counters and financial people always want proof and data. And is there any sort of data collection or any way that the promotional component of the island alone can be measured or evaluated?
Yeah, it's good to hear again. You can do the same thing. That actually you can do more with it, but you can count the people that are landing on the island. You have a listing of all the avatar names. You can contact them with and basically an IM all of them. Like if you know, want to introduce new things that you put on the island, to check it again and that kind of stuff. So there's all kinds of stats you can pull from that. Stats are usually done with scripting, and the script, right now there's a script inside of the welcome area, so I can exactly see how many people went to the island, at what time, how long they stayed, and that kind of stuff. That's all possible, yes.
Sorry, there was somebody who had their hand up a little earlier. Please feel free, I think it was Chuck, just feel free to use the microphone or text in a question. Well, while there's a pause here, I'm just going to take over the PowerPoint here for a second, Gunnar. You're on 19, and go to the last slide, because prior to the session starting, Dave had let us know that there's also an Innovate webcast coming up on Second Life, and he sent me the information for anybody that's interested. Not sure what the date on that was, Dave. Do you know?
Yes, it's February 20th. I'm sorry, I didn't include that. And I'm also not sure. I think because Innovate is basically Florida-based, I think that's Eastern Standard Time, but I'm not sure. You can check on the URL here is the actual webcast schedule for that particular topic. So I'm sure you can find out for sure from there whether it's Eastern Standard Time or not. Sorry, Lynn, and everyone else. It's on the 20th, I believe. I'm just going to check my calendar to make sure that that's the case. It's a Tuesday. I had my mic off. I apologize for that, the dead space here. Yes, it's at Wednesday, February 20th. It says 1 p.m. I'm not sure if that's Eastern Standard Time. I believe that Innovate, because it's based out of Florida, as far as I know, that's probably Eastern Standard Time, but people can check that URL, I think, to verify that. Sorry, I may have created some confusion here. I don't know if it's February. I've got it in my calendar. It's February 20th. There's a number of Innovate webcasts that run almost daily next week, but do check out that URL, and I think you'll be able to hone in on the right time and place for that.
Hi, I see Lindy's got her hand up. Go ahead, Lindy, if you can use your audio. Sorry, Lindy asks, what's the research theory being used to make decisions, and what questions are you asking?
It's a good question, Lindy. At this point, it's very pragmatic. Our thought was to replicate the physical structure and then basically see who came. We have no overarching research program at present in place. I think in terms of the individual projects, they'll be more theory-based at that point. We've seen some examples in the chatbot research that Bob and Mike Proctor have been involved in. A lot of the information is going to be, we're going to, you know, put stuff up there and just determine how student response is. A lot of the uses of Second Life that we proposed are in terms of marketing and recruitment. It's going to be very much, I think, a see what the responses are and go from there. We are also tracking other research being done on this, but I think your presentation, Lynn, was probably one of the best I've seen in terms of being advanced, of advancing the learning theory behind it.
Just out of curiosity, how many people using the green check mark up top think they'll be able to join us on AU Island after the presentation? That's excellent. We've got quite a few. I might ask Gunnar to put that URL back in because I think I've lost it. It's way up in the text box. So if you could do that, Gunnar. Are there any other questions while we're here? Because I know not everybody's going to be able to go in. So please take a moment now to voice your comments and just do so by clicking on the mic.
Hello, this is Kirk Madison in Alaska, and I was interested in the gallery that was being shown there. It looked a lot like a regular gallery. You'd walk around and just see one side of the paintings. Has anyone tried building a gallery where the objects hang in space?
Yeah, Gunnar here again. Objects that you place are not physical objects unless you make them physical. Everything is built with prems, so primitives, but by default, if you create one, if you pull it up in the air, it will stay there. Some prems you want to be physical, like if you create a ball or something like that, a beach ball, which is in world down at the beach, those are physical, so you hold it up, you can grab it, actually you can pull it up. If you let it go, it'll drop down, but everything else by default stays wherever you put it in space, so that's kind of a neat thing there.
I'd just like to add a little bit to that. Those examples that you saw are, you know, basically were made for today's presentation. We haven't finalized what we're going to do, but I expect it's not going to be exactly like a typical gallery that you'd see in real life. We're hoping to take advantage of a lot of the possibilities that Second Life has to offer.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I really like also the communication elements that you've got in there. The cards are things you normally see in a gallery. Being able to record comments and perhaps even communicate with artists would be a great add.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea, actually. I'm just going to jot that down right now. Thank you.
I'll just jump in as well. I'd like to ask the group, there was a question in the chat box that went by, I think from Lindy as well, about the distance that voice communication can be carried on in Second Life. There's a range, I think, of about 10 or 30 meters that you have to have another conversation outside of that radius if you want to carry that on without hearing other people's conversations. And the walls as well that you may build within a conference room, for instance, don't stop that, don't stop the sound. So there are implications for ongoing, there are several discussions ongoing at the same time in Second Life. Has anybody had much experience with that?
I think your answers are coming in from Lindy there, Dave. I would venture to guess she's probably got the most experience. Well, if there's no more questions, I think a lot of people are eager to get into Second Life and check out the AU Island. So I'm going to close this up right away and stop the recording. But before I do that, I'd like to thank Bob, Colin, Dave, and Gunnar, and Mike. Thank you also one more time for this fascinating presentation. It's so exciting, like I said, the islands being built in Second Life for educational purposes, and I'm very curious to see where this goes. So thank you again for joining us, and I'm looking forward to chatting with everyone in Second Life in a few minutes.
Thank you, everyone.